It's time for Twig This Week in Google. We got a heavy-duty, big conversation going on about YouTube, whether they should be paying more attention to the weird stuff on YouTube Kids. Jeff Jarvis is going to defend Facebook. We're going to talk about everything in the underneath the sun, including flying cars. Yes, they're coming to Los Angeles in 2020, maybe. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 430, recorded Wednesday, November 8th, 2017. Uber's liftoff. This Week in Google is brought to you by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again with Eero's hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system. And now the second-generation Eero is tri-band, twice as fast. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com, select overnight shipping at checkout, and enter the code TWIG. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. And by Lighthouse. Lighthouse is the only security camera powered by the same technology that's in self-driving cars. Visit light.house/twit to sign up for 15% off Lighthouse when they ship and a chance to win a free Lighthouse plus a year of service. See site for contest rules. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Well, show where we get to. Oh, this is going to be a good one. I've been waiting for this one all week. Talk about some of the most interesting things happening in the world of technology, particularly with what Farhad Manjoo calls the Frightful Five. Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon. Joining us right now from the Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York, Mr. Jeff Jarvis, BuzzMachine.com, author of What Would Google Do?, Public Parts, Geeks Bearing Gifts. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey,
nice to see you.
Good to see you.
We're gonna see you off to Argentina next week. That'll be fun.
Next week, yes. Yeah. Argentina.
I love Buenos Aires. What a great
town. I've never been there. I've been dying to go there for years. I'm only gonna be there for 2 days.
Yeah.
But
you'll have fun.
Yeah.
Also here, journalist par excellence, Stacey Higginbotham. She's been around. She was at GigaHome. I didn't realize you worked for Time Warner, Time Inc.
I mean, Fortune.
Oh, Fortune. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You were there for a cup of coffee.
A whole year, actually.
Really?
That's like a cup and a half.
It seemed like it went fast.
It did.
She was very smart. In fact, I saw you acknowledge that the other day. You did the right thing. You started your own business. Stacey on IoT. It's a newsletter. It's a podcast with Kevin Toefel. And it's going great guns, right?
It is. It's actually doing really well.
You
so
got the
thank
scoop.
You guys.
I saw you on Tech Meme. You got the scoop on ADT and Ring.
Well, actually, Law 360 was reporting from the courtroom, so I just brought that out.
Yeah, but that's the trick, right?
I know, but like
you gotta know where to look.
I wasn't physically there. All As right. a journalist, I'm like, I got to give credit to the people who actually went and did the footwork.
Absolutely. What is your take on that? You know, I've talked to some people who say, this isn't a surprise, ADT is very aggressive.
ADT is super aggressive. Yeah. They have done some really shady things, both they and Alarm. If you look at some of their lawsuits back and forth between each other, you'll see some pretty crazy tactics.
They claim that Ring, they blocked, and a judge agreed, by the way. Judge gave them a temporary injunction against Ring's new security system, which they've announced but haven't shipped, and I think may miss Christmas because of this.
Probably, yes.
Claiming it violates their patents or property rights.
Yes,
and we should mention Ring is a sponsor. I just want to say that real quickly. Ring is a sponsor of the show. Not that that changes anything. It doesn't make me more in favor of them or not. I don't really know the facts.
So I don't know how many. I don't know how many of the facts you actually want to know. So that's probably
because you know it all.
Because I have a lot of information. It's very dull. So ADT alleges that. They not only stole their intellectual property, but they did so in a pretty like James Bondian kind of way. So ADT had invested in Zonoff and was contracted with Zonoff to do some, have Zonoff do some work for them. I know the guys at Zonoff. I've known them for years. The CEO,
Mike Harris.
Super nice.
Yeah.
Mike Harris, super nice, ethical dude. Basically, they had a deal. They had an M&A deal that fell through while they were being shopped. When that fell through, they kind of ran out of money. They couldn't pay ADT back for a note. And they were going to shut down the entire company. And then the next day, Ring gave everybody at Zonoff a job.
It's 75 people they hired.
75 people. I think all but one took the job. And Mike Harris went over. Now, ADT alleges that Mike Harris took all of ADT's IP because ADT, once Zonoff missed that payment, ADT got all of their IP. So ADT's like, Mike Harris handed Jamie Siminoff one, you know, RIP in a briefcase in a parking lot in Pennsylvania, which sounds really good, but I don't know if that's actually true.
So a judge gave them a temporary injunction. This sometimes happens and you go to court saying, look, while we're deciding this case, can you stop them from selling this infringing device? The judge agreed. So that's bad news for Ring. They're going to miss a big buying season. Meanwhile, Nest has a very similar device, which they're advertising heavily. And I think it's kind of interesting. I have an article on The Verge about this. And right next to it, it's gone now because I guess it was a carousel. I got an ADT ad. So
I should actually say ADT is an advertiser right now on my show.
Yeah. Well, part of this is that this is a big, and there's a Nest ad. So this is a big buying season right now for these kind of security devices.
Everybody has a new security company or a new security product. So right. Nest just launched theirs.
Yep.
Ring launched theirs and now is putting it on hold. Wink just launched a system. We've also got Almond, which is a router company. It's smaller, but they just launched a system. Notion just said that their stuff's going to work with Nest stuff. So, oh my God, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, so. It just shows you it's a big market. The
it
home
is.
Security
well, only 20% of American homes have monitored security. But everybody's like interested in having security.
In my experience with monitored security is I don't like it. We had monitored security. We've had it. We have it now. Every business has to have it. But the false, you know, oh, it's just kind of annoying. The calls in the middle of the night. Poor John took the brunt of those. But the calls in the middle of the night because one of the sensors went off. And we never, was there ever any, how many, we must have had a dozen in 2 years. And there was never any real intruders. And at finally got to the point where the Petaluma Police Department says, you're going to start paying for these if we have to keep going.
That's the problem, yeah.
And I think that monitored security often, well, there's just issues. Now, they call you, and that's, you know, most of the time we were able to preempt it. John would come down and see what was going on. But I've gone down there to meet the police, a couple of middle of the night rendezvous.
So, yeah, they hate that.
I hate that. So
and with good reason.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a good thing for the home. Maybe it is. If you're going to be gone a long time, I guess. Well, just have the neighbors look in and feed the cat once in a while. Water the plants. Pick up the mail.
Water the cat, feed the plants.
Well, as long as we're in the courtroom, let's not leave the courtroom just yet. The Supreme Court has thrown out the Samsung-Apple case. Remember, Apple sued Samsung for saying slide to unlock. We own that. Samsung fought it, lost. They finally ended up appealing to the Supreme Court. SCOTUS declined to hear the appeal. So Apple does owe slide to unlock, and Samsung owes them several hundred million dollars for infringing.
Good thing we're moving to facial and fingerprint unlocking, huh?
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, I can go on and on. And you were talking about this earlier, Jeff. There were rumors, and now it's been confirmed that according to the Department of Justice, AT&T must jettison CNN for the Time Warner merger to occur. There's some politics in here, of course, because we know the president's not a fan of CNN. And some think this is punitive. This is coming from the White House.
I've been reading Twitter about it, which, of course, now takes twice as long.
I buried the lead. Twitter, now 280 characters.
Aye.
And everybody insists on writing their first tweet, 280 character tweet, which usually means a bunch of crap.
Yeah, I get the joke. Anyway,
this will pass over, right?
I hope so.
Hashtag 280 characters.
And but this AT&T Time Warner thing will go to court, and Trump's public statements will probably have an impact.
Sure.
And I mean, I
one of his public statements during the campaign was he didn't want the merger to happen at all.
Right.
He said, if I'm elected, there will be no AT&T Time Warner merger, which I'm in favor of. I don't think it's a good idea.
The problem is it's not a competitive merger. It's a complementary merger. So it's hard to stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there really is.
LastPass decided to use its 280 characters to tweet 280 characters of bad passwords. There's a lot of this.
Oh, I have gotten so many. I see so many people tweeting period. Yeah. Return, period, return. I'm like, arr.
Pittsburgh Steelers took this occasion to tweet all of its former players in the Football Hall of Fame. Here's a William Carlos Williams poem.
Is it the plum poem?
I have eaten the plums that were in the icebox and which you were probably saving for breakfast. Forgive me. They were delicious, so sweet, and so cold.
Yep.
A good use of 280 characters.
One of the news organizations, I forget which one, put up the Trump bus quote.
Yes, a lot of them. I saw that retweeted like crazy.
Yeah.
Here's a good use of 280 characters. Ohio State put up the Ohio State song. Where, you know, the eyes of Texas are upon you.
It might work. I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day.
Here's one. Louise Dover tweeted, Obama sucks, Hillary sucks, Obama sucks, Hillary sucks, Obama sucks, Hillary sucks. That's creative. Arby's. MGM Studios, The Lions Roar. Roar. It goes on and on and on. Please, kids, let's grow up. This is like when Apple first came out with typefaces and every letter looked like a ransom note.
Or like the Animojis.
And emojis. You're right. If there's a blessing to 280 characters, it's to stop the goddamn Animoji karaoke's.
So, you know.
Somebody said 280 characters is Twitter's equivalent of Fat Elvis. Fat Twitter. I like it. We're going to talk about this article, and this really, I think, is going to be the centerpiece of the show today, because I really, I found this fascinating. I don't know James Bridle. I don't know who he is. He says he's a writer and an artist. It looks like his avatar is Malcolm McDowell from, that one where the kids revolt against the British.
A Clockwork Orange?
No, it's an earlier one. What's it called? Where the students revolt in the public school. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, he says he's a writer and artist, but he has observed something quite interesting about the algorithmically generated videos aimed at children, young, almost in many cases pre-verbal children, that are decidedly disturbing. And whether this is intentional or accidental or it's the Russians, we'll talk about that. That's going to be the centerpiece. Speaking of Russians, Marissa Meyer says she's sorry that Yahoo was hacked and the Russians did it. She testified today in front of the Senate. And she said, I was on my watch. And I apologize for the two massive data breaches. She blames the Russians for it, although there is apparently no evidence that the Russians were involved. She said, unfortunately, while all our measures helped Yahoo successfully defend against the barrage of attacks by both private and state-sponsored hackers, Russian agents intruded on our systems and stole our users' data. In 2013, there was a breach of all 3 billion Yahoo accounts. Yahoo had previously said 1 billion. In March, federal prosecutors charged two Russian intelligence agents and two hackers with masterminding a theft of half a billion Yahoo accounts. That's actually the only charge, at least the first charge, against Russian spies for cybercrimes that I know of. But the FBI says the 2013 breach was unrelated. Meyer later said under questioning she didn't know if Russians were responsible for the 2013 breach. But they sure are a convenient scapegoat. Well, no one knows still who did the 2013. So that's the first time we've heard about Ms. Meyer since she left Yahoo. Let's see. Gosh, there's a, actually today there is a we're jam packed.
There's tons.
Do you want to talk about the Facebook nudes, or are we saving? Are we saving our discussion?
No. Why should we save
that's
that?
That's a heck of a story.
Facebook.
I'm like, I think we should just go into it.
Facebook says it can combat revenge porn. Good. We don't like that. Twitter says the same thing. But in order to do it on Facebook, you have to upload nudes of yourself.
And is it nudes or is it the actual photos you're afraid are going to get out? So are they hashing your or identity, or are they hashing the actual photo?
Yeah, it's actually the actual photo. It says Facebook says if you send the photo you're worried about to the company first, it will make sure it doesn't show up because. And they won't store them. They'll create a digital, hash, which will help the image masher technology.
The interns who make sure the hash worked well.
Well, I'd be nervous.
Okay, well, wait. The Daily Beast just put up a story saying that it's actually going to be a person that looks at these. So Facebook workers, not an algorithm, will look at volunteered nude photos first to stop revenge porn. Here, let me drop this in comments.
First, you upload an explicit image of yourself to Facebook Messenger, which you can do by starting a conversation with yourself. Then you flag it. There's a new flag called non-consensual intimate image. At that point, the social network builds what is referred to as a hash of the image. Facebook says it's not storing the photos. I don't know why anybody would need to look at it, except I guess it could be misused by people to block other photos, right? Or if another user tries to upload... Yeah, exactly. If another user tries to upload the same image on Facebook or Instagram, Facebook will test it against its stored hashes and stop it. So, yeah, I understand because you got to make sure it really is a explicit photo. So some poor person has to go, no, that one's okay. Like that for like 8 hours a day.
Yeah, and with a real person involved, I'm sure nobody's nudes will ever get compromised.
Hey, boss, I heard there's an opening over there in the Facebook standards and practices, and I'd just like to apply.
You probably don't want to see the nudes for
the
average American. I
don't.
I gotta be honest.
It's not a good job, and I know. And I've heard from and talked to. Actually, I don't know if I've personally talked, but I know people who have talked to the people who do these kinds of things for companies, Twitter and Facebook, and it's a terrible job. The burnout is very high.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be.
Just a terrible job. You don't want that job. But I'm willing to try. I'll give them a shot. No, I wouldn't do it.
But you're going to send your pictures?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Oh, no.
Let me ask my iPhone if there's any brassiere pictures of me.
Oh, Lord.
So hold on. I'm just going to run the logic of this. So imagine if there were a way that I could make a hash of my own photo and all I send in is the hash, right? There's a program that lets me hash a photo.
Oh, that would be the way to do it. But then they still
Wait. Then the photo comes in and the alarm goes off, says, whoop, 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 that's a bad photo. That's when you look at it.
Oh, you're right.
Okay, but
don't
if
look
you
at my
hash
photo,
the photo,
I just send in a hash.
That makes sense.
If you send in the hash, it has to be unhashed for the computer to actually match.
No, that's what Jeff's saying that Facebook gives you everybody a program they can run locally on their photos. Mm-hmm. So the photos never do get uploaded, just the hash of it. You're brilliant. Jeff, would you call Mark and tell him this? Then it uploads the hash.
Trying to solve so many of their problems.
And the problem, of course, is the false positive or the prankster who wants to keep photos of, let's say, Hillary Clinton photos off Facebook. So when the alarm does go off, that's when a human looks and says, no, that's Hillary, and lets it through. Or, no, yeah, that's explicit, and blocks it. Yeah. That would be much better.
So then the vulnerable person is only sending in a hash.
Yes. Oh, come on, Facebook.
Yeah, it's brilliant. I do say so myself.
You have Mark's number. Call him.
Mark, about these explicit photos.
But I want to point out, it took Jeff about 3 seconds to think of the solution. Why does Facebook,
Plus, even the instructions they have, you got to share it with yourself and then report it.
That's bizarre. I think you should patent this.
Plus, but there's another problem to it. So let's say that you and your honey do something and presuming he's the bad guy, takes the photos. And it's on his phone and you don't have them. So you're fearing what's being put up, but you don't have access to them. My solution doesn't solve that. That's still a problem.
Yeah.
And I can't prevent it.
Then I think that's, I would be honest, that's probably more often the case.
Well, the nudes that you send them aren't the ones that you're worried about.
Supposed to be the ones you're worried about. No,
they're.
Then this is just stupid in so many ways. Yeah. It's just one of those publicity stunts.
It's a publicity stunt, and we gave them.
But the publicity is going to be terrible. Yeah. Publicity is going to be Facebook wants you to send them your sex pictures.
Yeah.
This is.
We had a very good conversation with Ed Bott about Facebook. I'm getting more and more disturbed by this company in particular, but in general by the big data collection going on all companies. This is the Cashmere Hill's got another great article. Now this is anecdotal, so I'm curious what you think about this. How it's the people you may know section in Facebook.
Yeah, she's been on that for a while.
And here are the examples. It started with her, right? Her personal story, I don't want to go into all, I can't remember all the details, but basically somebody she knows, is connected with their family, but nobody else would know, was offered to her as people you may know on Facebook. And it was like,
yeah,
weird.
But that one,
it went well.
There's all kinds of connections to connections. She does know them. I mean, this is a paranoid.
So let me,
oh my God, they're listening.
It might not be. I mean, when I read these and they're anecdotal, who knows? It could be a coincidence. I'll give you a couple. She says she's heard more than 100 bewildering anecdotes. Here's one. A man who years ago donated sperm to a couple secretly so they could have a child had Facebook recommend the child as a person he should know. He does know the couple.
He still knows.
But he's not friends with them on Facebook.
But he still knows the couple. And there's friends of friends. And if it ties him to that couple, then the fact that that child is connected is not hard to see how that happens.
Okay, here's another one. Okay, I agree.
Facebook is pulling data from other places, too.
Mostly, what I would guess in this case, from other Facebook accounts.
Like, no, I mean like your credit reports, not your credit reports.
Do we know they're doing that?
I believe they talked about pulling data from transactions.
Okay. It wouldn't require that to do this because Jeff's right. The scenario would be the couple, he's not friends with them, but they have a friend in common, right?
Yeah.
And so he's friends with somebody who's friends with them, and Facebook's algorithm would parse that and say, oh, well, since you know him, you might know her.
And if you look at the people they recommend to me, it goes way the hell out. I can't figure out. I mean, it's so far, it almost seems random.
How about this one?
Are very loose connections.
A social worker whose client called her by her nickname on their second visit because she'd shown up in his People You May Know, despite their not having exchanged any contact information.
They may live in the same town. Yeah. How did you get recommended to the shrink in the first place? It may be through friends.
This one's tough. But again, you're right. You could come up with ways this could have happened. And that's the problem with anecdotal evidence like this. A woman whose father left her family when she was six had his mistress of the time, 40 years later, suggested to her at Facebook. Not his current mistress or current partner, but somebody 40 years ago.
Once again, we don't know what the connections are. We don't know.
Okay. Attorney who wrote, I deleted Facebook after a recommended person, People You May Know, a man who was defense counsel on one of my cases. We had only communicated through my work email, which is not connected to Facebook, which convinced me Facebook was scanning my work email. Yeah, I hear these stories all the time about Amazon Echo as well. Remember that we were having a conversation about traveling, my husband and I, in front of the Echo, and all of a sudden Amazon started spamming me with luggage ads. Somebody actually told me that.
Well, but I'm going to go back to my story about the journalist who told his family and friends on Facebook that, oh, man, I fell down and I broke my phone and this happened and that happened. He started getting ads for multiple sclerosis. It wasn't because somebody sat at Facebook and said, this guy has MS. It's because there were small signals there, right, the advertiser had, and connections and AI systems to say people who have multiple sclerosis happen to do these things. And there's signals that are not intuitive. We don't know. And yeah, welcome to the world of data, folks. But it's not some mysterious, conspiratorial, creepy thing. It's just there is an answer to how this happened. We just don't know what the answer is, and we don't like black boxes.
Okay, so Facebook has done deals with, back in 2012, it had a deal with Datalogix to get data from stores where you made purchases. In 2016, there was a story out saying Facebook looks at GPS data and contracted with Square to get their data for both who's in stores and what they're buying.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, Facebook does get external data.
And it's just like magazines do deals with Axiom.
Yes, anyway, Facebook,
I didn't know that you could opt out of a lot of those companies. I just found that out yesterday.
So researchers have determined that between 4 and 8 pieces of data are all that's needed to de-anonymize someone. And location data actually requires less. So if you start thinking about that, Facebook knows who you are and can start making some surprising correlations. And that's what's freaking people out.
Well, and I think Kashmir acknowledges that. But what she says, this is still cause for concern. She says, she writes, behind the Facebook profile you've built for yourself is another one, a shadow profile built from the inboxes and smartphones of other Facebook users. Contact information you've never given the network gets associated with your account, making it easier for Facebook to more completely map your social connections. Really, what's happening is we're reaching critical mass. That the data points that Facebook knows about you have gotten rich enough now that they can probably build a pretty good replica of your social graph by inference, not direct connection, right?
Not even your social graph. This is people who you have relationships with that you may not even be aware of.
Right.
So it's...
Here's the example with the attorney. Facebook, she says, is not scanning the work email of the attorney, of course. I mean, it might look like that, but it likely has her work address on file, even if she never gave it to Facebook herself, because if anyone who has the lawyer's address in their contacts has shared their contacts with Facebook, which almost everybody does, then the company can link her to anyone else who has it, like the defense counsel in one of her cases. So Kashmir's not asserting any creepy...
No, she's just
pointing out.
The sanest person writing about this. Yeah.
Yeah, she's just pointing out that this is the nature, this is how Facebook works. Where is People You May Know? Because I don't see any.
Oh, it'll recommend things to you all the time. Oh, yeah.
I don't see any on my page.
Oh, yeah. It comes up in your feed.
That's what I thought, but I guess I don't know anybody. Facebook has gotten less and less.
Do you have?
You know who I almost always see is you, Jeff.
You're sick of me. I know. You're sick of me.
See your tweets. Look at this. This is my Facebook page right now. It's all Jeff Jarvis all the time.
By the way,
it's all Jeff Jarvis. And then there's an ad.
Richard Painter. Do you ever watch Richard Painter on TV?
No.
He's the ethics. He was the Bush ethics guy who's on MSNBC constantly. He's like Dick Tracy. He talks like Dick Tracy. He's the greatest. I love this guy. He's amazing. I'm trying to look for... Of course, right now, Facebook's not recommending anybody to me. I get it all the time.
Yeah, I think maybe they turned this off after Kashmir's article.
I'll go to friends and then go to find friends.
Oh, maybe I can do it by hand.
And then, no, that's sent requests.
I know, I've seen this before. And I've accepted a bunch of friends that way. And it's mostly people.
Go to friends. Yeah. Go to the little two people on the top. Okay. And then scroll.
Find
and you'll
friends.
See.
Oh, here it is. People have been PYMK. I know Daniel. I don't know Floris. I don't know Fernando. Petaluma Dental Group used to go there. They're not my dentist anymore. Scott Bourne, mutual friend. Ant. I know Ant. Let's add him.
Jane Spencer works at The Guardian. Yeah,
this guy's dead. Shouldn't they, I mean, literally, he passed away a few years ago. Should he be in there? I'll follow him anyway. There hasn't been a lot on his timeline lately.
Mine's pretty terrible.
Is it? Like bad suggestions?
But I am never on Facebook.
Right.
Like,
me neither.
I don't give them a lot of signals. So they get very little from me, yeah. But I like the top person is someone I have no idea. There's also 71 pending friend requests. So,
I've got 960.
Like Facebook's probably like, I give up with you.
Well, it did for a while. No one could make a friend request for me for like 2 years. And I kind of enjoyed it.
Oh, I just ignore everything on Facebook.
It's very hard. You always talk about moral panic, Jeff, and I understand that. And of course, I agree with you. But at the same time, it's very hard not to sometimes look at this stuff, even if you know better, and say it's kind of creepy.
That's why it needs explanation. The creepiness is the mystery. And that's why transparency matters. That's why just saying this is what's happening, folks. And they may not want to because there's other factors here.
I don't think that it is just creepy. I think people are taking Facebook signals or signals from other data and they're applying it towards things like credit report or credit card, mortgage lending, insurance payments. And they're making actual real world decisions based on this. And people don't understand. It's gone out of their control. Social redlining. And I would argue that some of the same worries we have about, for example, that the YouTube story we're going to talk about later are very similar issues here. Yeah. We're automating things.
They are.
We don't understand.
They're closely related. I agree. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we outlaw them now. It means we try to understand them better.
You can't understand how a computer. So this is MIT actually put out, I want to say it was 2 weeks ago, some good research. MIT Tech Review had an article about how researchers are trying to open up the black box of AI. Because what you do when you're building a neural network, when you're building these kind of algorithms, depending on how you're teaching the computer, but you're giving it lots of examples. You're tweaking it when it's right to help push it towards the right answers, the answers you want. But the computer figures all this out on its own. So we really don't actually understand how it's coming to some of the conclusions it comes to. All we can do is say, yeah, that's right. Good job.
My list of people is actually pretty good. There's probably about 15 people in here I would like to know. There's a lot of ones I don't, but.
Here's a posting from Stanley Lieber, and I don't even know who he is. The images in this are great. Do you know who he is?
No, this one was this is an example of techno panic.
Okay. Okay, let me just mention it, you all can be the judge. By the way, his title is, You Won't Understand This. He said, this is my exit interview from social media. And he kind of talks about each service and then talks about the insights he's learned. I remember the internet before Google. F you forever, Google, for breaking email for everyone in the world. F you forever for enticing users who don't know any better into relying upon your services and then shuttering them with little warning. Your extensions to established standards and ever-changing policies make it increasingly impossible for individuals to host and control their own information. Yes, I am aware this is no accident. Search quality is no longer a core competency of Google's, the internet's premier search engine. Two people type the same search, each receives a different result. Yes, I'm aware this is likewise no accident. The quality of ads displayed alongside various Google services has steadily devolved from semi-relevant to absolutely irrelevant at all times. Yes, I'm aware this is no accident. Then he's talking about he has negatives in each column and malware served is one of them. That's true. Insight. This is kind of a joke. Google does not want you to know or remember anything, if at all possible. Then he talks about Facebook. Mandatory non-linear curation of user-contributed content, malware-served gamification of personal interaction degrades human health. I can't disagree with him on that. Gamification, right, that's what they're doing, of personal interaction degrades human health. It's bad for you. No? He says, Facebook provides worldwide 24/7 telepathic content with every contact, with every person I or members of my extended network have ever met. How many degrees of separation between me and the worst person alive? Now that person knows that my mom threw up after breakfast and wants to offer advice. I kind of enjoyed this. Twitter, worldwide 24/7 telepathic content with every person I or people I used to think of as friends ever met or favorited or retweeted. How many degrees of separation between me and the worst person alive? Now that person knows the GPS coordinates of my bedroom. Gamification of personal interaction degrades human health.
You see, but hold on right there. That's the line that got quoted, right?
And I quoted that, by the way. Joke. That's me, yeah.
Well, others did as well.
Okay.
And it's just, there's a damage being done here, and that's what concerns me. I'm about to give up. I'm tired of this fight.
I think there's a damage being done to us. The game of, I think it's exactly right. What used to be a benevolent, in fact, valuable thing in life, which was interaction between two humans on a real, genuine, intimate level, has been degraded into these tweet storms.
Hold on, Leo. Hold on. Reality check. So, I hear this, oh my God, panic. So go through your Facebook feed and point out the first piece of degrading, horrible crap you find. You're gonna be scrolling for a few hours.
Really?
I don't see degrading, horrible crap in my, and I use Facebook a lot, so it's gonna oomph up stuff to me. No. And even Twitter. I mean, you know, unless you want to go follow the jerks.
You're right. It's all friends and nice people.
And... Yes. And we're losing sight of that.
Yeah, but it's more subtle than that. It's more subtle than that. I don't know. I think it's pseudo relationship.
So there's plenty of things. This guy, you know, Jeff, you can scream techno panic, but there are plenty of people who have bemoaned the fact that these online services and even software and apps are gamifying things to get you to spend more time to boost their metrics. And a lot of people are rightly concerned about this kind of digital manipulation.
Hey, Stacey, we make a living doing that right in headlines and journalism. What we do.
Yes, we do, but we also
Not that good at it. That's the difference.
That's exactly right.
Okay, we're not that good at it, but we also offer. I'm not trying to be holy. I'm just saying that this is a thing that's happened. It's also, I was going to make the point that we have been worried about this with TV forever.
Yeah,
See, this is exactly what moral panic is. The TV is going to ruin society. That gives no respect to the members of society,
but
that we are such sheeple that we could be pulled along. I don't believe that.
Without this debate, then we do get unfettered manipulation. And I would say, so I actually tweeted this because I thought this was a really good example of digital manipulation that is horribly uncool and takes advantage of vulnerable people. And it was the Interneting with Amanda Hess column from the New York Times this week, which was a 4-minute video talking about beauty apps and filters for various Instagram, Snapchat, et cetera. And basically, the idea was that they're pushing just insane standards of beauty, like facial bleaching, nose mushing, and all of these other things to give young girls plastic-looking faces. They talked about how gamification is really driving these girls back and forth, and it does have a measurable effect on their self-esteem. And we can't ignore that. And we shouldn't ignore that. And you can call it techno panic, but I think we should be having these conversations, because otherwise we're just giving them a pass to take advantage of everyone. And that's not cool. And that's my thought.
Yeah, but the bottom line, it's people doing the bad stuff.
Yeah, well, it's
the norms that we need to create, the norms, you're right, we have the conversation, but blaming just the technology and the platform.
Well, no,
there are people who are doing bad things
it's
and
not,
we need to blame them.
It's the corporations using technology in ways that were never possible.
You can turn that around, Leah. You could also say that the technology exists and people come in and exploit what was meant for good.
Yes.
Well, how did Matt Cutts make his salary, right? Because something good was created that people then exploited for bad. And they have to put enough resources into it to try to stop that from happening. But the chicken and egg here is not that the big bad technology company comes along and says, how can we ruin society and make a fortune doing so? I don't believe that. That's
what
you hear.
They can make it happen at scale. And that is what's scaring people. There are a couple things that are very scary. One, you can very cheaply learn how to gamify people incredibly effectively. So A-B testing costs nothing on these platforms, right? So you've basically scaled the ability to manipulate people incredibly effectively. Exactly. And that is something we should be talking about. And
what do you want to do about it?
That's the question.
I'll tell you what. I think we need to hold corporations' feet to the fire. And this is going to get continue with this next segment, which we're going to talk about the gamification of one-year-olds and their attention. But I think we need, I think these companies, and this is what Scott Galloway is saying as well.
Have to hold individuals who do this stuff. See, you're blaming strictly the platform. You're not blaming the actors.
Well, who, you mean you Larry Page? Who do
so
you mean?
I mean whoever the schmuck is who makes that bad thing that goes to kids.
You've got to go to that person. As a state, you have to enact laws to prevent bad things. As a platform, you have to, laws are probably not the right, but enact rules and punish people. And right now, I think the issue, especially with this YouTube thing, is that they're not actually paying attention. They're not devoting the resources to police the platforms for these bad actors.
Worse than that, they're actively abrogating their responsibility because of the holy grail of growth in the stock market. And you can say that for Twitter. You can say that for Facebook. Growth is everything. And that's why they're abrogating their responsibility, because it's financially important to them that they have this kind of user growth. They need to gamify.
Let me come in and advocate for the devil here to both of you. Number one, what I'm trying to suggest here is you don't only go after the platform. There are actors who are manipulating the platform to do bad things. You've got to go after them. You can't just say the technologist should fix this. That's that. The person who's doing the bad act.
But don't you agree with Stacey that the platforms have a responsibility?
Number two, the platforms do have a responsibility. You're right, but you are way underestimating the difficulty that scale brings.
Well, that's the argument.
Let me finish this one. I got two against one here. Normally, I'm the interrupter, I know, but I got two against one here. Al Franken. How could you not have seen that rubles bought those ads? Well, come on. We all know that it's sophistication. They weren't looking for the signal of rubles and political ads. It was only after the fact they said, oh, crap, rubles and political ads, right? And there was no system in there that was built in. Scale is hard. Yes, scale is profitable, but scale is also hard. Scale is what enables your Aunt Mary to sell her jam. Scale is what enables us all to make videos and podcasts and make a living at it. Scale is what enables all this good stuff, but scale is also difficult. Now, should we hold them responsible? Yes, but in a reasonable way. And just saying everything is their fault, the darn platforms did this, while we're taking advantage of all the stuff, I don't think it's being honest. And I also think it's being productive, because if you go after the platforms, somehow you've also gone after the bad actors who are manipulating the platforms. Actually, we are in league with the platforms against those guys, but we're not treating it that way. Okay, now I'm done.
Okay, so couple things. One, when it's a money-making issue, these companies find it's worth their while to actually deal with their problems that are caused by scale. So we see this with things like crappy search results. Google, for example, comes in and is like, oh, hey, you know what? We're seeing a lot of people do these stupid how-to articles that are useless content. We're going to start downgrading those. Facebook does it too with
Upworthy.
Thank you. I was like, the headline site. Yeah.
Which, by the way, was started with the best of motivations, Upworthy was, and did the worst to media.
I know. They're lovely. But they're not evil. But they were gaming the system. So you've got
Define gaming.
But Google, she's right, Jeff. I mean, link farms, demand media. Time and time again, you're right. There are bad actors who say, we're going to take advantage of the algorithm, make a lot of money. And when those things happen, Google is able to stop it. That's why Matt Cutts has a job.
Upworthy said you let me finish,
and you're pulling the Upworthy straw man. Yeah.
The one who raised Upworthy.
It's one example.
The rest of this is
to inform the public. Upworthy's motive was to use these techniques to inform people and get them to get stuff. I think they went all off.
All right. Don't be mean. Okay, let me finish. So they have made these efforts, but when it comes to things that are profitable in a way that isn't significant to them and doesn't appear to have a lot of harm, I guarantee you they're going to start having people moderate the YouTube kids content after all this kerfuffle because it's not going to be worth it to them. But up until this point, up until someone pointed it out, they were content to let this go. And the reason they'll figure it out is because Disney and Nickelodeon are going to be like, hello, your brand is being totally tarnished. And they're going to pull their content. So the point here is these guys, they are not benign. They understand scale is hard, but when they want to, they can address it. And so I don't think it's wrong to sometimes say, oh, guys, you're letting a lot of crap through here and you need to fix it. It's not techno panic. It's a legitimate democratic way to like engage with the platform.
All right. Pause.
Yeah, we agree. But there's two. One more second, Leo. All I'm saying is that if that's all you do, then that means that you blame the technology for everything. I say that in addition to that, you need two more things. One is you need to go after the actors who actually do the bad acts. And I don't hear a lot of that going on.
Very hard to do that.
Well, it's international.
The problem is it's international and law enforcement. Let's acknowledge that
this isn't that easy for the platform to say, oh, rubles and ads. Why didn't you know
it's easier for the platform than for Interpol.
I'm saying it all comes together. And I'm saying that we also, as individuals, we have a responsibility to change the norm so we don't go supporting fights online and trollish
behavior. I think we all agree. All of these things have to happen. But yes. I think Stacey's point is very well taken, that if you want to be a platform,
I agree with
you. You no longer get to say, oh, we're just, you know, a common carrier. We're not responsible. And I feel that many companies, you know, Twitter is a very good example. I think Facebook's a very good example. Google may be a pretty good example. Many platforms just say, you know, we're just a carrier. It's not our fault. Let's take a break. Because this conversation will continue and we get to this, something is wrong on the internet. And I
think we've pretty much done it already, but go ahead.
Well, I have to show you these videos and I want to warn people that not to let your 2-year-olds watch what we're going to do in a minute because it's disturbing. And if you're, I don't think it's so disturbing that an adult will be harmed by it, but I hate to think of a little kid watching some of these things. We're going to take a break, come back with more, Jeff Jarvis, Professor of Journalism, University of New York, the master of the Socratic dialogue, Stacey Higginbotham, journalist par excellence, Stacey on IoT.com, and I'm just the guy sitting in between them. Our show today brought to you by Eero. Eero started in, what was it, about 2015, 2016, early 2016. I remember reading about him and getting very excited and pre-ordering. It was the very first consumer mesh system. There have been business systems designed to do this. In fact, we'd used some, but nobody ever thought of doing this in the house. Eero did, and it was brilliant. The idea of not a Wi-Fi extender, but solving increasingly worse Wi-Fi issues with a mesh Wi-Fi network that includes a base station and multiple access points was brilliant. Since then, they've learned from hundreds of thousands of systems. And one of the advantages of being the market leader is that means they know a lot about what makes Wi-Fi break and what makes it work. The second generation Eero is now out. Oh, I love it. I put an Eero and two beacons, the little satellite stations in my house. And it is the best Eero we've ever had. More speed, more range, same high quality design. Actually, I think it's even more elegant. The Eero beacons just plug into the wall. They have a little nightlight, so I put them in the halls, and it's very convenient. With the addition of the third 5 gigahertz radio, the second generation Eero is tri-band, and by the way, twice as fast as its predecessor, so you could do a lot more, watch more movies, listen to more music, surf and email to your heart's content. And they've added a Thread radio, so now they can connect to low-power devices like locks, doorbells, other sensors, and more. If you need more, easy to add another beacon. Every 1,500 square feet should have its own. You plug it into a wall. It's easy. If there's an outlet, there's Wi-Fi. I like Eero so much that I gave my mom my original system. Went out to Providence, Rhode Island, set it up for her. And it really solved the problem. She had an art studio out in the backyard that she couldn't get Wi-Fi. And she really loves listening to internet radio, streaming internet radio. including this show. And so now she can do that. I put an Eero out there and an Eero in her kitchen. I have myself, we have three Eeros in our home. And I just, it's a set it and forget it. And Eero has so many nice features now, including great parental control features. You can identify every device that attaches to your network and associate it with a member of the household. So I have all of the things Michael uses, his phone, his computer, his tablet, in his account. And I can say, I can actually do it with the Echo. I could say, Echo, pause Michael's Wi-Fi. And suddenly he's offline. I do it because I love him. We do it because we care. We actually have a set time that the internet goes off, 10 p.m. Doesn't come back on till 9 the next morning. It also filters so he can't see stuff we don't want him to see on the internet. Really works very, very nicely. Of course, the adult computers aren't filtered, but they are because they're filtered against malware and other attacks. And the Eero automatically updates. The firmware gets updated all the time. I'll give you an example. You know about the crack vulnerability that meant it was possible for a bad guy to snoop on your Wi-Fi. Within 24 hours of that being revealed, it was revealed on a Monday, by Tuesday, Eero had automatically pushed out a fix to all of their customers. Nobody's that good. They're the best. Incredibly fast response time. Automatic updates. It's what you need, what you have to have in an IoT device, and it is the best router out there. Simply enough, iOS and Android app makes it easy to set up, but also easy to control. No more dead zones, no more buffering, Wi-Fi that works. We've got free overnight shipping because I know you want it now. Eero, Eero.com, use the offer code TWIG. And you might want to consider my example. If you've got family members who are complaining about their internet, it'd be a very nice thing this Thanksgiving or this holiday season to go visit them and have a nice package of Eeros wrapped up for them. Eero.com, get free overnight shipping with the offer code TWIG. Something is wrong on the internet. So what's basically happening here is happening not just on YouTube, but everywhere. The idea that videos are starting to be algorithmically generated with algorithmically generated titles and hashtags because people have observed that little kids, nonverbal little kids, are using tablets, watching YouTube, and some of them fairly benign, like this one. This is the Finger Family song. Watching YouTube videos, enjoying them. And then mashing the next button or auto-playing to the next video. Now, I'll show you this because it kind of sets it up. This is the Finger Family. And some people might think this is a little creepy to begin with.
Kids commercials out there, kids shows out there, I consider creepy too, but kids like them.
Yeah, it's bright colors.
Kids are weird.
Remember, it's nonverbal. And by the way, it's something a child of three or four identifies with. It's things they know, their family, their hands, their bedroom. So it's like any nursery song. It's very approachable. And by the way, it's very catchy. I couldn't stop singing it after I watched this video. Here's the song. We've gone to Finger Family Park, where there's a giant hand and a boy and a girl on the hand dancing. It has a little bit of a Bollywood flavor to it.
Daddy finger,
are you? I'm guessing this must have originated in India or somewhere like that. By the way, notice the subscribe to our channel, suggested Little Miss Muffet nursery rhyme. Of course, something will autoplay right after it. So that's the, I don't know if this is the original, but it's kind of a benign example. It's a little creepy. They got parents and kids on fingers.
Like I say, Barney's creepy.
It's like Barney.
What's that one with the big roly-poly beasts who walk in the colorful land? British one.
Oh, Teletubbies, yeah.
Teletubbies, yeah. I mean, that's creepy.
And then there's another meme. Some of these, by the way, are intentionally created creepy, like from 4chan and others. This is the meme of the wrong heads. So this is where Disney might get involved. There's Aladdin. Same song. And now different heads from the Aladdin movie are on there. And a little kid from a different Disney. I don't actually think she comes from Disney at all. She's crying. She's another character.
She's from Despicable Me.
That's right.
Despicable Me.
Despicable Me, yeah. So you could say, well, that's not so bad. That's teaching kids, I don't know.
She's coming out to cry them. She's telling like them this. That that's the wrong head.
Right. So I can see that.
So this is not that bad.
That's benign. Okay, now we get creepy. You ready to get creepy? And we can't watch the whole thing. You can read the article, James Bridle's
which piece, is very long.
Which is long on Medium. But this, so what's happened? This one has been generated. Now, humans have to create these. But he says small animation teams, because it's very primitive animation, can crank these out. They're auto-generated in terms of names and text. So the name of this is Buried Alive Outdoor Playground Finger Family Song Nursery Rhymes Animation Education Learning Video. And this combines a lot of the stuff you might have seen.
Oh, we're going to have a hamburger emoji fight now. Sorry.
No, their cheese is in the right spot.
Well, they're purple. Now, here comes the Hulk on a motorcycle. McDonald's, by the way, featuring prominently here. I jumped ahead, didn't I?
No.
I should go to the beginning, which is the creepiest part. Here's the Joker walking along. He throws a can at a guy on a motorcycle. Oh, it's Spider-Man. Knocks him off. Motorcycle crashes. He picks up that creepy, creepy, creepy cry. He picks up a Spider-Man. Now here comes some creepy clown, does the same thing to the Hulk, knocks him out, picks him up, carries him off. Then this is really creepy. This is a young woman sitting in her kitchen.
Elsa.
Who is it? Elsa?
It's Elsa.
From Frozen?
Yeah. And she's just not dressed in her stuff.
And then he sprays something on her, and she passes out, and he carries her off. Is that Punisher? Who is that? It's some cartoon character. Here's Purple Spider Girl. Death comes in with a scream mask and a scythe, knocks her out. Again, the scream. Now, the problem is because of the title on this, a parent might, and bright colors, and listen to the music, yep. The playful music, a parent might very well accidentally let a kid watch this. Maybe they started with Daddy Finger. Now they've been buried alive, these characters, and they're dancing around them. But fortunately, this gets really creepy. Here comes baby heads on. I don't know what's going on here. Another spider character in the Hulk with baby heads spotted. They call the police. The policewoman is going to come rescue the people.
Policewoman is also Elsa.
Also Elsa. Well, but see, little kids, they go, oh, it's Elsa. And now the police have come in her Chevy pickup, and she beats up all the bad guys. The baby head people dig up the characters. Everybody's free. Death gets a kick in the head. I don't know. Is this creepy? It seems creepy to me. I wouldn't want a one-year-old to watch it. It seems nightmare material. And there's a lot more.
They're definitely worse.
It's not the worst. I won't show you the worst stuff. But you wouldn't, I think, so you said, Stacey, you have a personal experience to relate to this?
Yeah. So Anna, my daughter, she watches YouTube a lot. And she's actually really cautious about what she watches because she is, you know, we've had the debate about what you can't see, you can't unsee on the internet. So every now and then, she comes across, and there are characters. It is a creepy show that's like on Adult Swim or something, and they put these in the types of videos that she likes to watch. I think it was a Minecraft video, so it's not necessarily for kids, and this wasn't on YouTube Kids, but it just came through.
Oh, that's the other point. This is not on just on regular YouTube. Yes. This is on the specially protected for kids
That's the key of the problem here. And that's where Stacey's point before is right, that you've got to, if you're taking responsibility, you've got to do it right. You can't F it up.
Well, like Google's messed up. I mean, so in this case, that's a problem. But they also, with their kids' content, you know, once a kid is above 13 because and they're not under COPPA protection, and Amazon does the same thing, they suddenly go into this world of like, oh, you're an adult now. Whereas many of us who have 13-year-olds or have experienced 13-year-olds would be like, not really.
No.
but yeah, so my daughter like saw these things and like freaked out. And she comes running to me and she's like, who are these creepy people? And apparently they're super popular, but
they are. Yeah. In fact, our 14-year-old watches some really creepy videos called Hug Me, I'm Scared. And it's an ironic, I think, for that age. I don't know. So what Bridal writes is, the system is complicit in the abuse. He says YouTube and Google are complicit in the system. The architecture they have built to extract the maximum revenue from online video is being hacked in the sense of used by persons unknown to abuse children, perhaps not even deliberately, but at a massive scale. His point is there are millions of these. And he thinks that there is some responsibility that Google and YouTube have.
It would be nice. Oh, go on.
I think that your point, Jeff, is well taken, that given the volume of videos on YouTube, there's an issue. It's going to be very difficult to police this.
But if you're putting out a child safe product, that's where Stacey and I could agree more. That is where you say, above all, that you've got to go to the expense and you've got to have the scarcity to say that there's some structure that you can be near perfectly guaranteeing that it's child safe, or else you're hurting your brand, you're hurting children, you're hurting
Your partners.
Everything you have. You're hurting your partners, you're hurting everything you do. And then there's a separate... So all I'm saying is, yeah, we absolutely agree there. So that's where the scale thing doesn't really... You're going to limit the scale of it. It's going to be limited size because you're going to have quality. And we get back to quality. And flight to quality is not a bad thing. Now, can you do that with YouTube as a whole? That's where it becomes much more difficult. But in terms of this limited project, yeah.
It's the ongoing conversation we've had for the last few years about... And by the way, it's starting to migrate into the public sphere as well, the non-technical public sphere, about how this free speech democratization that the internet promised has kind of turned a little sour in some ways. Yes?
But you see, that's the problem, Leo. Well, that's where Michael
people
got...
are jerks.
Yeah.
And, but not all people are jerks.
A thin layer.
But now you're throwing out the entire internet.
No, I'm not. But I feel like there are people, and Jeff, you and I probably agree, but this idea that there are bad people or people who behave like jerks on the internet, that is always going to be the case. The question is, I think we have to figure out how to deal with them. And ideally, the platforms will take a role here, not in a, maybe not banning people or maybe establishing clear rules, but also give people on the platforms tools to avoid things.
Well, they have those tools. YouTube Kids has blocking and everything. And I think that's the rationale. That's the justification Facebook and Google and others use. Well, our users will curate it. Our users will do it. Our users will kill fake news. But I don't see any evidence that that's happening.
Well, right. And so that's... And that's where we get into the questions of scale and abuse of the scale. And it's basically people hacking the algorithms. And we've got to figure out...
Stacey? Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm on lag, so I didn't hear you. Go. Keep going. Sorry.
We have to figure out how to recognize that when it happens and put a stop to it as quickly as possible. And that was Matt Cutts's job, for search. So I think we just have to figure that out across.
Tell parents YouTube to stop kids. Using YouTube as a babysitter.
So that's, yes, but YouTube isn't necessary. I mean, perfectly good parents put a phone in front of their kids.
Yeah, I let my kids watch Teletubbies. Yeah. The difference was you could trust if it was on PBS or it was BBC, you could kind of trust it.
Or you bought a CD-ROM and you knew what was on it.
Yeah. And I even edited out the bad stuff in Bambi. I made a special videotape of Bambi without the bad stuff.
I think Disney's going to arrest you now.
Yeah, Disney doesn't like when you do that.
Well, it was for personal consumption only.
So I think that Stacey, the larger issue, which I don't think we've kind of dealt with, is the full implications of scale. Right. And I'm going to pardon me here. Get your drinking glasses ready, folks. If you go back to Gutenberg, the problem was that you had a scale that was one scribe, one book, one year. and society could deal with that. And you went to people who read the books out loud to you, and you knew what they were, and they were guaranteed. And fine. Then suddenly, oh my God, all these books. And Erasmus says there's too many of them. It's going to ruin society. We can't handle this. Right? Then we come up with norms. We come up with systems to grapple with that. Now we're at an exponentially larger scale. And the scale is wonderful on the one hand. It opens up the possibility that we can all publish and all make podcasts and all these wonderful things. But then inevitably come spammers, which is first the economic piece. And that, you're right, is where the company is motivated to hire Matt Cutts to fix the spam. It's an economic problem both ways around.
But then
the next thing that happens are the really nefarious actors.
At first, though, this is the problem. And this is where people are complaining. The first reaction the company has is, oh, good, we're going to make even more money. When their feet are put to the fire do they stop this stuff.
Okay, so it's part of our job in the ecosystem is to put their feet to the fire, which I agree with. But how we do that, I'm part of the – I helped start the Open Brand Safety Network, where we're identifying the worst of the worst of the worst of the fake news sites. There is money going from major advertisers still to those places because nobody has put their feet to the fire to say, hello – what Sleeping Giants did with advertisers and Breitbart, we need to do it large scale now. So I'm agreeing with all this. My problem with this entire discussion, though, is that if you stop at blaming the platform and expecting they can fix it, you'll both be disappointed and be harming the good that can come from it. Just like, you know...
Okay, they don't have to fix it, but they don't have to be complicit in it. And I feel right now they're complicit in it.
That's where I disagree. I don't think there's somebody sitting there saying, "Ooh, if we get rid of this horrible, creepy stuff, we could lose $100,000."
No, I think it's what we talked about last week.
They're saying it's not worth our time to deal with this.
Or they're doing what Twitter did. Yeah. We talked about this last week, where the guy, the safety guy, goes to Twitter and says, "There's all these bots and spam and Russian actors," and Twitter says, "Yeah, but we need the growth numbers right now." Don't you think that happens all the time?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they are complicit. We know they're complicit.
But they, all of them, I don't think so. I think that Facebook and Google are at a higher plane. I don't think they sit there and say we can make money off of crap. I think they realize at some level that the crap is damaging to them and damaging to what they do and to their missions.
Are they good at
dealing with it? No, they're not. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
And do we need to hold their feet to the fire to make them do it? Yes. But the problem I have is this cynicism that says, oh, the only reason they're running these platforms is to make money, and they'll do anything to make money, and they'll put all this crap up there. That's naive.
The only reason they're doing this is actually to make money.
You think the only reason they're doing it is to make money?
Yeah. Do you really believe that Mark Zuckerberg cares about connecting the world?
Yes, I absolutely do. I believe that Larry and Sergey absolutely believe that they are making the world's knowledge accessible. Absolutely.
But they are there to make money. As publicly traded companies, they are there to make money.
We all are. We're here to eat too. Yeah. Part of, you know, and I'd say we're not rich people, but even rich people then think they have more power than they have and try to look at Ricketts closing DNA Info and LAist and all that this week. We are human. And we have to check our motives. But yes, I absolutely believe that. I have no problem believing the sucker. If I didn't believe that, I sure as hell wouldn't have taken their money to start the News Integrity Initiative. If I didn't believe that Google were essentially good, I wouldn't believe it's worth being on a show every week about them.
Oh, see, I'm on the show because I feel like someone has to act as a check against their power.
I think it's both. But if I didn't believe there was something good essentially here, it wouldn't be worth checking them. Then screw it. I believe there's something good here that's worth preserving, and that's their stewardship of the internet, and that's what worries me, is they've got to make sure they're responsible stewards.
Okay. I can agree with keeping them responsible stewards. That makes sense.
There is also, though, the issue of scale. I mean, sure, Erasmus didn't like all the books Gutenberg was putting out, but we're at a much different scale now. It's global. It's pervasive. In fact, scale's the problem. It's hard to correct because of scale.
Scale's the benefit and the problem, but it was the same then. We'll figure it out. If the problem is, if you don't, do you give up hope that we can figure it out?
No. I do think that we can't, that their motives are not always pure, and we have to realize that. And we have to question that. Because
I agree with you, Stacey. You can assume their motive is profit. If it's not, then they're mismanaging their
company. If that's all you presume it is, then
I'm not saying it's all, but the mix matters.
Well, okay, let me tell you something. Mark Zuckerberg is not, and his company are not optimizing the news algorithm for benefit to society. That's right. They're optimizing the news algorithm for engagement and money. Right?
They would say they're listening to what the people want. They're giving them that.
Yes. Engagement.
That you are responsible.
So they can make
more
money.
I think that's a bit of a cop-out, but that's what they would say.
Yeah. But that's the point, is that Mark can say all the things he wants to say about his lofty goals and ambitions, but in fact, the news algorithm is not optimized for lofty goals and ambitions. It's optimized to make money, as with any company.
It's also optimized.
Here's the confluence. The confluence of late-stage capitalism with immense power, computational power, with immense computational data and a critical mass of knowledge and data. And you combine all those, you've got a toxic stew that is optimized in a way that is bad for society.
Okay, wait. That's where I think you're going way overboard. This is where I'll bring in Mike Godwin. Mike Godwin should have a new law here. And he's been screaming on Twitter for the last week or so more eloquently than I can.
I started following him. He
is arguing the evidence that we're in a moral panic. His definition of a moral panic was that when you have to convince people that it's all awful and they don't really feel that way, then you're trying to instill a moral panic. And his argument is that most people keep using Facebook and they're fine with Facebook. And I repeat my challenge before: go through your Facebook feed and find what's so ugly and awful and society ruining in it. It's not there. It's not there.
I think it's more subtle.
Do bad actors manipulate this? Yes. Are there bad people? Are there trolls that I hate on Twitter? Do I wish Twitter would stop enabling women to be harassed? Yes. Do they need to have higher standards? Abso-friggin-lutely. Is do not be evil good enough? No. Be good.
Jeff,
it has to be the new standard.
If your standard for damage is whether people like it or not, then we should just have McDonald's food served at every meal.
That's a standard for any product on earth, Leo, is do people like it or not? Any product. That's your starting standard. Is there a market for it? That's every single product we make, including books.
All right, but it doesn't mean it's good for society.
It doesn't mean it's healthful.
Yeah.
That's how newspapers are sold, Leo.
People like crap. Yeah, but fortunately,
magazines.
I think your mindset, it does come from that generation where newspapers were published by people who had felt a higher mission.
I can introduce you to lots of publishers.
Not all.
Who I think are
not
are,
all. Well, the New York Post. You can't say the Post has a higher mission.
I think it's worse than much of Silicon Valley.
But I think the New York Times and the Washington Post. I think Dean Besquet and I think they have they I think have a sense of societal obligation that's high. Maybe not the publisher, but the editorial staff that of good papers have a higher.
Well,
sense.
Who's making the money?
Well, and there may not be making.
See, that was the problem.
Money.
We in editorial just said, "Oh, that money stuff. Somebody else will handle that. We didn't take responsibility for it. We didn't. No, we can't stand above that. We were awful.
But that's
we
the way.
Proper stewards.
That's the way it was supposed to be. It was a division of labor, and that the we try to do that here. The editorial side is not impinged upon by the money making side,
and it led to poor stewardship from us on the editorial side, and we didn't take responsibility for the decisions being made. And that's how we ended up in clickbait land.
Don't you think it's worse now? I mean. Don't you think
I admit
this wasn't a paragon of virtue, but I think it was a lot better model than what we've got today. There's nobody at Facebook arguing. Maybe there is. I don't know. Arguing. Well, we got to do something about this.
I think there are. I think the problem is, no, it's scarier than that in a way, Leo. Here's the thing I've seen, and I've seen this again and again in their public pronouncements. We think, they know how to do this. They're just choosing not to make money. No, the problem is it's bigger than them. They don't know how to do it. They don't know how to fix this. Otherwise, they'd fix it. They don't know how. That's what's scarier, right? Is that that's what scale brings.
I think there's pressure on them not to fix it. I think there's economic pressure on them not to fix it.
Honestly don't know. I think we impute a lot more brilliance and ability in them than they have.
Well, then it's a runaway train with no conductor.
This is called progress in the future. And some things are going to go right and some things are going to go wrong. And the problem is, don't lose sight of the things that are going right. There's a tremendous amount that's right about the internet. And this discussion is entirely throwing that out with the bathwater. That's what I fear. That's what I hear the discussion all around right now is, oh, my God, the internet is broken. The internet is horrible. No, you use it every day. You're not bombarded with crap every minute of every day.
I don't think everyone thinks the internet is broken or horrible. I think people are asking legitimate questions about what the implications are when their decisions are manipulated by social platforms, when these platforms abdicate their responsibility in certain areas, and how we're going to handle that and how we should hold them responsible, the role that these platforms, understanding the role these platforms play in our lives and the implications. That's not a bad thing to say.
I agree with you, Stacey. I agree, but that's not the tone that I'm seeing. If you go to my friends at The Guardian, they have gone full, utter techno panic. And there was a columnist they had 2 days ago whose whole lead was, I hate the internet. I hate everything about the internet. I hate the internet. I'm hearing that tone constantly.
That is the way these things get debated. I mean, look at what happens with things about, you know, look at the soda tax in New York City. You have people in either extreme, and then you have people debating throughout the spectrum. And so, yes, do extreme viewpoints get people to pay attention to an issue? Yes. Then they will come in and have these discussions. And I understand your worries about a techno panic, but I feel like you're constantly bringing... You run all the way down that slippery slope and you're like, techno panic. But then you come back up and you're like, okay, I agree with you on this. But you're kind of doing the opposite.
How we have this discussion. The problem is that I see the discussion. Look at the congressional hearings.
We're having this discussion right now.
But smart people like Al Franken, right, who knows better. The whole rubles thing, it was for show, right? And it was scoring points against not only Facebook, but the net. And that's a guy who knows better and a guy who's smart. And that's where it's happening right now. And the result can be what we see in the EU is you can get horrendous decisions like the right to be forgotten. You can get decisions like charging the platforms $500 million every time something wrong is there. You can get to the point where we expect them to decide what's right and wrong. We're seeing the fruits of this. And this is not an idle worry. It's we are empowering the politicians to do bad things to our beloved internet when we talk crap on the internet all the time and we don't also remind them of the good that we have to preserve the good.
Let me, instead of using the soundbite from Al Franken, give you a quote from the article he wrote in your favorite publication, The Guardian. I've gone away from it. And the title is, We Must Not Let Big Tech Threaten Our Security, Freedoms, and Democracy. This is an opinion piece. And he says, last week's hearings demonstrated these companies may not be up to the challenge they've created for themselves. In some instances, it seems they failed to take common sense precautions to prevent the spread of propaganda, misinformation, and hate speech. The platforms at Big Tech, and I actually think this is pretty astute, the platforms at Big Tech have designed may now be so large and unruly that we can't trust the companies to get it right when they do start paying attention. If you have 5 million advertisers a month using your highly sophisticated, nearly instantaneous ad platform, can you ever really know who all of them are? Can you ever?
So he's answering his question, by the way. What do you want to happen then? So what's the answer? That we prevent people from advertising? So Aunt Mary can't sell her jam?
No, that we have they can actually develop algorithms that pay attention to signals that are important to question, to say, hey, this looks suspicious. Maybe we punt this up to someplace else.
Franken's being positive here. He's saying with great power goes great responsibility, and these companies have to be held to account. I think that's fair.
Reasonably so. It cannot be, it will not ever be the same as running the New York Times, and we don't want it to be, because you and I couldn't get into the New York Times.
Right. That's this show would not be on mainstream broadcast.
Right. And so if we want a controlled, safe, completely cleaned up atmosphere, what's the level of responsibility
you hold them to? He's not saying it needs to be controlled and safe. He's saying that they need to put things in place to make this, to make them not complicit. So they see when things are going wrong. It's basically like saying, hey, you built this awesome city, but you know what? Maybe you should put some streetlights in because sometimes it gets dark and your people are going to want to see what's happening. That's what he's saying.
We're agreeing about that. But it's very important to have a discussion of where is that line.
Well, and, and, let's,
and what the implications are and who gets kicked off. Well, I saw a list of, you know, of unreliable sites that shouldn't be advertised on. Well, some odd things got onto that list. And what happens when Breitbart ends up that list? And, you know, where are you in this world? This is not easy. This is really hard. And again, I don't think we should presume that they know how to do this. They're just refusing to, which is I think what Frank is saying, which I agree with, is maybe they don't know how to do it. But let's acknowledge how hard this task is. It's really hard.
Everyone,
and
he
to
says,
say they need to figure it out. That's also part of this. He's saying you can't just. I mean, it'd be like if someone created Frankenstein. You created Frankenstein. Now we got to figure out how to rein him in. How to make sure that he doesn't go terrorize
the populace.
It
doesn't help anyone to say, oh, it's very hard to keep control of Frankenstein.
And danger, danger, folks. Danger, danger. So that's exactly what Iran says and China says. And you're setting a precedent and setting a mechanism that are you suggesting,
Jeff, there should be no regulation?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm suggesting have the discussion from saying the internet is a good. Let's protect the good of it.
Here are the questions. Frank says, yeah, we agree. We all agree. There's good stuff there. Here are the questions Franken says we have to think about. How did big tech come to control so many aspects of our lives? How is it using
our... That's right there. That's loaded as hell. Does it control my life? That's fundamentally patronizing and insulting to the citizens who vote. That's the exact attitude
that
says,
Jeff.
Oh, the technology makes us do bad things. No, a few bad people do bad things using the technology. Big difference.
No, there is social redlining. There is the use of this data to decide on whether or not to hire people. There are real world implications. And so is it controlling your life in like a scary mind control way? No, but it is narrowing your choices in ways that people don't necessarily understand.
It broadens your choices in tremendous ways you've never had before as well. You can go to LinkedIn and get jobs you never could have found.
I can see more cool stuff, but... And I'm aware of that, but I'm unaware of the bad stuff that's happening, the punishments. And I think that lack of awareness is really important to talk about. And that's what I think we should be having a debate about. That's where we should be shining the light of transparency that we all are so excited about as journalists onto these platforms, saying, hey, who's using your stuff? What data do you collect? What shadow profile do we have?
This is exactly the
question.
We
all agree about
that. That first question, you're right, a little loaded. Second question, how is big tech using our personal information to strengthen its reach and its bottom line? Are these companies engaging in anti-competitive behavior that restricts the free flow of information and commerce? He says this is a net neutrality issue, too. Are they failing to take simple precautions to respect our privacy and protect our democracy? Simple precautions. We're not asking... impossible things. And finally,
know if we want them to do our democracy, but okay.
What role should these companies play in our lives, and how do we ensure transparency and accountability from them going forward? So there's two different burdens here. I agree with you, Jeff. If you feel like technology is controlling your lives, the burden is on you, not the technology. So there is definitely a burden on the individual. But I think that it's reasonable for us as a society through our government to ask these companies to preserve competition, to protect privacy. I don't think those are unreasonable things, to protect our security. Those are reasonable things to ask a company to do.
This is the same government that just today is trying to force Time Warner to sell CNN out of spite. The same government.
Well,
that's who you want to regulate the speech. That's the fear.
So that's
and
that,
I know
that
I sound like a libertarian.
That is the country we live in. No, and I have covered politics forever. I have dealt with the net neutrality debate, for example, over several successive FCCs, including, I was going to say Colin Powell, Michael Powell.
Michael Powell, yeah.
But this is the fundamental compromise we make when we have the government enact laws. We vote in a group of people who feel the way we feel, or the opposite of the way we feel, the way politics goes now. And we have them craft laws that other people may decide to enact differently. And that is the risk we take with a democracy and the ability to vote people in and out.
Part of the pressure we put back on is to decide what should be law and shouldn't be law. And if I'll go back to the EU. The EU, I think, has already gone way overboard.
Possibly.
And I fear that here.
But there's also the risk, you have to acknowledge, of a backlash if these companies don't start to take some responsibility.
Amen. That's why I press too.
It could go very far in the opposite direction. And all this great internet stuff would not be.
Amen.
Amen.
That's exactly what's happening. I think that's what Michael Godwin's point is now.
We've gone too far.
We're going to lose. Yeah, we're going to lose. They didn't do enough. Listen, I've been arguing that too. Right? I could give you chapter and verse about how I pressured them and
well,
argued them.
It would be a good thing for them to do something before people start to say, well,
yeah, they should have set an entirely new standard for transparency in political advertising. For example, they should go way beyond what's required of TV. They should be releasing every single political ad in a way that's searchable with an API, with all of the targeting data. They should be doing all of that. They should have done that before anybody even breathed the idea of legislation. They should have seen this coming. They weren't smart enough to. Same with this porn thing. Same with another story we have up on the rundown. They're not smart enough. This is why I've argued they should hire journalists so they can just get a sense of public responsibility. I agree with all of that. They're messing it up. They're messing up our internet, and that's why I fear. But I also think I need to keep pressure back on the idea of us turning into EU regulation. That scares me worse.
I actually think GDPR is decent regulation.
I don't.
I know.
I mean, I don't want to get into GDPR right now.
All right, let's take a break. We'll have more.
Yeah.
Rest, relax, get a, you know, just take a nap.
Fun stuff next, like,
back to your
like drink some coffee.
Like
planes coming down and fights and things.
It's really, you know, it's really an interesting time. I feel like there's something brewing. It's not Skynet. I'm not saying it's Skynet, but there's something brewing right now in the capabilities of big tech companies that is new, unique, and can be a little worrisome. And
it could also be magnificent.
It could be. Well, and there's a lot of magnificent stuff. But in order to keep that, as we said, to keep the magnificent stuff flowing, we've got to make sure that they responsibly handle the stuff that's damaging.
Yeah, but all I'm saying, Leo, is that for those of us who are around technology and are savvier about it, it's up to us to defend the good stuff because that's not happening now. We have a special responsibility to do both. Absolutely, to do both. It'd be critical of them. And if you want me to spend an hour being critical of them,
you're being. I get it now. So you're pushing a little harder on the other side because there are plenty of people of Luddites, of non-technically savvy people. We're pushing hard in the other direction. So
that's why I wrote Public Parts, because I said there are plenty of protectors of privacy. I am well confident that privacy will be well represented as an issue.
That's fair.
But sharing is not well represented right now.
Yeah. 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 I think
so we, as usual, agree in all matters of substance here. It's a matter of tone and a matter of priority and a matter of what we each fear is different.
Yeah. Fair enough.
But now you got to make some money because that's all you really care about, Leo.
That's all I care about
is making money.
Somebody says, but Leo, you read ads so you guys don't have to. Here's the Chinese wall right here between you and this following ad. our show is brought to you today. By the way, you know, this is a big challenge for us about what should we accept ads for companies like Microsoft and Apple? Companies that we directly cover or not? That's an interesting question, too. I mean, one we fortunately have not had to answer because Microsoft and Apple have never come calling. Our show today.
hint.
Google? Never. No. Our show today brought to you by, it's called This Week in Google. You could own it.
Would you take an ad for Google?
We actually have, the only ads we've ever taken for Google, and I feel good about it, is Summer of Code.
Yeah.
Because that's a good thing. And I'm not sure. I think it would be very difficult for us to take Pixel 2 ads, for instance. I think that would be a real challenge. Well, meanwhile, talking about something like a mortgage company that does it better in a way that technologists would love, I think that's completely appropriate.
We'll get to your ad now. I'll stop interrupting.
Yeah. No. No, it's all part and parcel of the same thing. Our show is brought to you by Quicken Loans. They created something called Rocket Mortgage that answers a real need, and a need that I felt last time we bought a house. We went to a bank. First of all, went to a bank. That's nothing anybody ever wants to do. Second, going through the papers in my attic, in my file cabinet, at work, trying to find my bank's payments, bank statements, pay stubs, all that paperwork. Never had everything I needed, so we had to fax stuff and fax more stuff, and then they wanted more stuff. It was just like this endless, painful process. Death by 1,000 paper cuts. Then along comes Rocket Mortgage. I'll tell you, the next time I'm doing it with Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, they know a little bit about this. The number two lender in the country, $92 billion in home loans out there. Number one in customer satisfaction, thanks to J.D. Power and their surveys. For 7 consecutive years in primary mortgage origination, for 4 consecutive years in mortgage servicing, they're the best. And I tell you what, Going forward, they're even better because of Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your home loan, because it's a transparent process. You will understand every step of the way. You'll see it happen, and it happens in minutes. In minutes. It's kind of amazing. Plus, no paperwork, none at all, because they have trusted partners with all the big financial institutions. All you have to do is give them some basic information. They say, is this you? Yes. Give us permission to ask the bank for your pay statements or whatever. Yes. Then, based on your income, assets, and credits, they'll crunch those numbers, and they'll give you a home loan, all the options for which you qualify. You choose the down payment, the rate, the term, and you're done. You're approved in minutes at the open house. You show the realtor, we're approved. I love the big button on there. It says, download the approval letter and print it out. You're approved. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Rocketmortgage.com/twig. Maybe you're not buying today, but do bookmark that so that you will be ready if that house comes along. Rocketmortgage.com/twig. I like this. Google's adding wait times for restaurants. That's a nice feature.
I wonder how they actually know that.
Have they already done that? Austin does it.
They have the popular times. I've seen the popular
times. They do busy times. Okay. They popular times, which is different from wait time, yeah.
Okay, the TSA in Austin Airport actually uses Wi-Fi signals from someone's phone, so maybe they're doing that.
So this is, that's how they do it?
Well, that's interesting.
There's a data collection, huh? So they're going to do it for Google's published a blog post yesterday that says, skip the line restaurant wait times on search and on maps. So this is in addition to popular times. Plan your visit. People typically spend 45 minutes to 2 hours here. Peak wait time up to 1 hour, 45 minutes from 8 to 9 p.m. That's the red bar there. Wait times for 1 million sit-down restaurants around the world that allow walk-ins. So it's not for reservations. It's if you just walk in the door. And you tap, you could tap on the hour bar and you'll see the wait time for that period, typical wait time. Based on anonymized historical data.
Huh. So do they know how, wait time varies tremendously depending on how many people are in your party, for example.
They don't seem to be that granular.
Yeah, it just seems, you know what I think of at moments like this is the Seinfeld episodes that could never happen.
Yes. The Chinese restaurant. Such a great episode. Talk about nothing happening. The whole show is them waiting in line.
I just put it in the rundown. The fact that you would now know that you shouldn't be waiting there, George.
It would kind of just ruin the whole thing.
Ruins the whole thing.
But I think there's probably other material. I wish Seinfeld did a show. I wish there were a show like that today. I don't know if there is, but the Chinese restaurant. You can watch this on YouTube. Oh, it's only 4.5 minutes, but you get the idea. The whole show is them.
Is it Hulu that has Seinfeld, or was it
somebody? This is YouTube, which can't.
Garbage trucks, garbage cans, and garbage men. You're never going to stop crime. We should at least be clean.
You know what's interesting?
Sounds like this podcast.
Yeah, I was about to say, George, be on the show with
George,
us.
You fit right in. We didn't talk about this last week, the rogue Twitter employee who's shut down Donald Trump's account. I feel like that maybe...
Didn't? I'm surprised the name hasn't come out. I want to... Between that and the woman who gave the finger to the these are two social media heroes these days.
Yeah, so the woman who was bicycling when Trump's motorcade went by on the way to the golf course and gave the motorcade the finger got fired because she put the picture on her social media page, I guess on her Facebook page. It became her profile picture. And the company, which is, coincidentally or not, a military contractor, fired her. And now the latest is she's received several 100,000 job offers. What a weird world we live in.
For the person who killed the account for 11 minutes, my joke was that I want to hold a Twitter tape parade. You want to know who it is. I'm surprised that hasn't come out.
And yet, isn't it a little disturbing?
It is.
Ultimately,
But as a kind of moment of civil disobedience of sorts, the person lost their job.
Well, no, the person was on the way out. That's what happened.
That's true. They did.
This was their last. The story went out. This was this person's last day, and as a gesture on their last day. But yeah, I think this would be a similar situation where they would probably get a lot of job offers. Although I wouldn't want to offer a job to somebody who would do something like that, to be honest.
Well, so this person was a contractor, and what's distressing is that they had access to an account that, you know, at one point was close to starting war with North Korea. So
yeah.
I'm like, oh, that feels like perhaps lack security. And that to me was the big.
I agree.
Yes, it was funny, but that was kind of like.
The other question that went through my mind, well, could the same person have tweeted on the president's behalf? But Twitter was quick to say no.
No, they don't have access to tweet and they don't have access to DMs.
Okay.
So re-DMs.
Oh,
sorry,
God, they don't have DMs would be even worse.
Yeah.
DM Kim Jong-un, you little...
Rocket boy.
Go ahead, fire one. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Ooh, Trudeau and Macron's tweets, DMs about Trump. That would be hilarious.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, that would be.
Yeah, really, they wield a lot of power, these Twitter guys.
These twits.
Well, this was just some temporary customer service guy, right?
Don't call them twits. That's a common problem. People think Twitter and Twitter the same thing. They're not. God. By the way, Twit preceded Twitter.
Oh, like quite a while.
You're right. By a lot. How long have you been doing
Twit? Not a lot, but a couple of years. And I interviewed Ev Williams at the time, and I said, Ev, why'd you name your company Twitter? Because he knew about us. Because remember, prior to Twitter, it was Odeo, which is a podcast network, and we were one of his top podcasts. So he knew about us and still called his company Twitter. He told me at the time, well, I didn't think either one of us was going anywhere.
If he'd called it
he was half
Twitter,
right.
Would you have had a problem?
I don't know. It's just so close to Twit, and people confuse it all the time.
Well, that's not a terrible thing, getting confused for Twitter.
Well, it is if an advertiser confuses you and says, I'm going to buy some ads on Twitter, on Twit. I like that, Leo. Let me get some Twitter ads.
People used to think that I was the owner of BuzzFeed.
Oh, yeah, because Buzz Machine is your blog.
Buzz Machine.
Yeah.
Yeah, people was, oh, there's Jeff Jarvis. Jeff Jarvis, creator of BuzzFeed.
Oh, dear.
I do not have these issues.
There are not many Higginbothams out there.
Not true.
I think there's a Higginbotham Steel in the UK.
There is Higginbotham's, a bookstore in India.
Good.
I get lots of pictures of it. That's good. There is a famous astronaut, Joan Higginbotham. She's got a Wikipedia page.
I wish her name was Harvey Higginbotham. That would be a good name.
There's a judge. There's a famous
if
trombone
player. If
you have a
boy, will you name him Harvey?
I'm not having any more children, and no.
Enough is enough?
No Harveys, no more kids.
Harvey
Higginbotham.
Did you not
Higginbotham. Hear how often I travel?
Harvey Higginbotham. That would be such a good name.
Oh, God.
I forgot. Is this Andrew's name or your name?
My name?
It's not your maiden name.
It's my name.
It is your maiden name. Oh, okay. So you own it.
Andrew has, yeah.
You've
Andrew
had it your whole
totally
life.
Totally different name.
Your
yes.
whole life you've had that name.
Mm-hmm. And my dog has that name. Hello, dog.
What's your dog's full name?
Sophie the Terrible Higginbotham.
You got to give a dog a middle name.
The Terrible.
The Terrible? Okay.
That's her middle name.
Are you going to go, next time you're in Vegas, are you going to take a ride on Navya? It's a French.
Oh, I wouldn't have flash.
French startup, yes. Self-driving startup. It's got a little shuttle, 8 passengers. There is a safety driver, I'm sad to say.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was the world's most boring job, by the way.
It's the largest self-driving project in the U.S., even though it only goes on a 0.6-mile loop.
How fast does it go?
Downtown. It's downtown, so it's not fast. LiDAR, GPS, V2I vehicle. Oh, that's that thing we were talking about, vehicle-to-vehicle infrastructure mm-hmm. that will let it communicate with sensors embedded in the Vegas traffic signals. I'm sad there's a safety driver. Google's starting to give rides to people without a safety driver, you know.
Well, wait, hold on, because L.A., I have relevant information. So, L.A., Las Vegas, I went there and I actually saw and spent time in their innovation district and wandered around with their head of technology and innovation, who is actually going to be on the podcast next week as my guest. And I learned so much about smart cities and how they're actually implemented. And the guy who is in charge of this, his name is Michael Sherwood. You should have him on your show because he is the geekiest geek who is so fun. And he's done everything from give an Amazon Echo skill. So you could actually, on the Echo show, watch city council meetings. But you can also ask it to ask you or tell you, sorry, here we go. Madam A, what is, you know, where should I play baseball today? And it'll give you the like city parks that have baseball.
Oh, that's awesome.
So he's built all that. And They're talking about creating like roads, like lighting variable lane roads where you like light up the roads based on traffic patterns.
Oh, so go this way, go that way.
We're that's back to Seinfeld once again. This is what Kramer did when he took it, when he sponsored part of the LIE.
Yes.
Wanted wider lanes. That's right. See, everything comes back to Seinfeld. Sorry.
So, no, this guy is a total nerd. He's so great. And he did promise me a ride on this bus when I go to LA. So I am totally taking him up on it.
Apparently. Have you ever been in one of the self-driving cars?
I don't think so.
You'd know.
Unless you count the times that I've fallen asleep at the wheel. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Here's 4 hours ago, Danica Patrick, who is a race car driver, and Penn and Teller riding the first self-driving vehicle in Las Vegas. This is obviously before the ride. They're smiling.
They not be smiling after the ride?
I'm just kidding. I would like to see a picture of them.
Because Teller just wouldn't shut up.
Yeah, right. He is such a gab fest. Gabber mouth. All right, what about this Disney story? I like this story. I thought Jeff Jarvis might have something to say about this.
Yeah.
Los Angeles Times has been doing a series of articles on how Disney manipulates Anaheim to reduce its tax bill and get special treatment and favors. Disney didn't like that too much. Disney, which, by the way, owns ESPN and ABC, is actually a fairly large journalistic entity in its own right, said LA Times reporters can no longer come to review our movies. And at which point the New York Times said, well, our reviewers aren't going to your movies.
That was really fascinating.
That was awesome.
Right on.
I was so excited.
At which point Disney said, oh, screw it.
Never mind.
I think that's great when the New York Times sticks up for the LA Times.
Well, other journalists did it too. Like,
yes.
I think USA Today. And
yes. It's right
on. I'm just saying, I was so excited that this was journalists standing up for journalism.
This is the essence of the church and state. When I was not to make this really trivial, but it's what I do. When I was TV critic at People, I gave terrible reviews to Hallmark Hall of Fame specials because they were so treakly and awful.
They really are awful.
Jerk!
But you were 8 years old, Stacey. Of course they were good for you.
She likes them now.
Cheesy movies.
Yeah, see, this is a hidden vice of many people I know. But they pulled all of their Hallmark advertising from People.
Yeah, that's what happens. That's what they used to do.
Yeah.
And I don't blame him for that, I guess.
I will say that I once wrote a story at GigaOM that really upset a large networking company. And they said to my CEO, we're going to pull our ads and our subscription to we had a research service. And my CEO was like, all right, then.
See you later.
Go for it.
Bye.
And they did it for like a hot second. And then eventually my CEO, he didn't even tell me. That's how
which is the right thing to do. The right thing is to not to influence you. Yeah.
I found out like a year later because we were drinking and he was like, by the way, I totally stood up for you.
Yay.
I was like, oh, thanks.
Yay.
And then the company went out of business and
Yeah, well, never mind all that. See, if only, Stacey, instead of holding up for principle, if only it had gone after money and only money, you'd still be employed there and everything would be okay.
Well, what I'm hoping is I can get podcasters to all agree to boycott Apple until they let me into their events.
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Yeah. But really, is Disney's behavior any different?
No.
No,
it's just weird that Disney's has ABC. I mean, like,
yeah, it's a slight problem.
ABC doesn't make money for them.
It's a big company. There's lots of arms. By the way, also the New York Film Critics Circle said, Los Angeles Film Critics Association said, well, the Boston Society of Film Critics, they're not eligible for any of our awards in that case. I don't know.
I don't think the Oscars said the same thing.
No, I noticed. No Oscar thing. Uber, this is an example of just press release. We might have flying cars in LA by 2020.
Then again, we might not.
Then we might not. It might not happen. Los Angeles will be the third test city. NASA will provide logistical support. Uber has a flying car project called, very nicely, Elevate. And Uber's head of product, Jeff Holden, announced at the Web Summit in Lisbon today. The company is adding Los Angeles to Dallas, Fort Worth, and Dubai as cities where they hope to pilot their aerial taxi service by 2020. And here is an artist's depiction what it might be like to get in a flying taxi cab.
Could I say that both the private jet thing we were talking about earlier and this have a woman business traveler?
Right on.
You know, I was like, yeah, because even when I'm traveling for business, I'm definitely in the lounges and stuff. I am definitely a minority.
Really?
So I'm like, yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, just as a woman.
She's ascending the elevator. She has used her Uber app to call a flying car and is now going out onto the roof of the building and is being ushered along with other women and one guy. Oh, no, there's another guy. Into her flying car, which really looks surprisingly like a helicopter. Not sure how this is different from flying a helicopter.
Yeah, they've had this in New York City for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
used to be in the Pan Am building.
It's a helicopter, folks.
I imagine a one-person drone.
Is there no driver? No, there's even a driver.
Oh, but look at his fancy screen.
Yeah.
She land in the backyard, drop down there,
relax, and enjoy the ride. You know, he's got to go to a special transit center. It's just like taking a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly.
So the question is, if you buy the Uber helicopter, do you get the Uber cars that take you back to your home?
I think that's what just happened. Yeah, she got
an Uber car.
That was an Uber car.
So the last mile problem is solved.
Oh, that is a tremendous pun being made in the chat.
Oh, yeah? What do they say?
It's a liftoff.
LYFT.
Totally.
Well, I was just listening. I'm listening to a really good book right now. What's it called? You might like it, Leo. You might like it, Stacy. I've changed my launcher for.
What's it about?
It's about capitalism in America.
Oh God.
No, but it's. I learned all Americana, a 400-year history by a startup guy named Boo Srinivasan.
That does sound good, actually.
And it's really very good. It starts off with Mayflower and the economics of it. And they weren't really, it was an economic thing. See, it's all capitalism. It's all ugly.
I like it.
And all I'm right. up to the Telegraph now. I think you might like this one.
What's it called again?
Americana, a 400-year history of capitalism by B-H-U Srinivasan.
Good.
Srinivasan.
Putting it on my Audible wish list.
I have a book recommendation for y'all.
You do?
What's that?
It's kind of nerdy. I don't know if Jeff would like it, but Leo, you might. It's called A Mind at Play, How Claude Shannon Invented the Information
Age.
Love
that book. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It came out over the summer. But I
bought that one. I got bored by it.
Well.
Yeah, Jeff, am I right or what?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, I think I bought it and I started listening to it.
Because I'm interested in Shannon.
Shannon's fascinating. Maybe I didn't. No, I didn't.
But wasn't there an issue with one of the authors that we were talking about?
Oh, was there an issue?
I think so.
Tarnation. Is he a jerk?
I can't remember.
I should write a book because there are no issues with me.
You should. You never harassed me. I'll vouch for you.
I'm kind of snippy sometimes, and I have threatened to punch you. So
I consider that playful banter.
I think that he deserved it, Stacey.
Repartee, and I deserved it as well. No, yes. I hope that it's the book Claude Shannon deserves, because, of course, without him, we don't really have technology. We don't have computers. So, you know,
or mobile broadband.
Oh, yes, because of the, what is that, the TDMA? Did he invent or?
No, he did. Part of Shannon's law is how you cram the number of bits per hertz in your spectrum. So how many literal bits can you cram in a hertz of spectrum?
Oh, yeah. Jimmy Soney. He's another one of, he was an early victim of the trend that's going on right now. I'm going to close that article because I don't want to, you know, it's the Gawker. I don't want to give him any credit.
Is it Gawker? I'm okay with Gawker.
Yeah,
okay.
Well,
yeah, people are missing Gawker now.
Yeah, now
I miss Gawker so much.
You know, you look at all this Weinstein stuff.
A lot of good they did back then.
This is the age of Gawker. Yep.
Yeah, you got to figure Nick's just going.
Oh, Nick did. Did you read Nick's piece?
No.
Nick wrote an excellent piece about just that. Oh, yeah. It's on
Medium.
Yeah,
but okay, so if he's so good, why didn't he expose all this stuff earlier?
Well, they did. They were working on Weinstein.
Okay, good.
People weren't listening to it because it was a gossip rag.
Right. That's right. What they should have worked on, not outing people who didn't, you know, I mean, that's what they should have worked on.
Today's gossip is tomorrow's news. If you go to Medium, it's the top post.
That's all right. I'm not a fan.
All right. I remember that.
He wrote nasty articles about it. Actually,
Nick and I made up.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it was. It actually was nice. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna let you guys know.
Yes, that you are married to Nick Denton.
No, I'm getting hungry.
That we can do something about.
What time is it? Oh, it's almost 7. Like, jeez.
We still can talk, but I just want to
take a break, and
warning.
I'm going to give you. Do we have anything to say about Al-Waleed bin Talal being arrested by the Saudi prince?
I don't know anything about Saudi politics except what I've read in the New York Times.
Yeah.
So I have nothing to add here.
He,
but
of course,
I'm happy to talk about it.
One of the big investors at Twitter, at Lyft, at Apple, a Saudi billionaire. You know, they claim it's a corruption investigation, but I think most people I trust say it's just a power consolidation.
But the best part is they're arrested and put in the Ritz.
Yeah. Well, at least he's got a nice digs.
The Ritz is not too happy about the brand association, I don't think.
I never met the guy. I don't know. Snapchat wants to redesign so that it's easier for the oldsters to use.
See, this is...
No, don't go after old people.
Well, I made that part up.
This is the ruination of Facebook.
But I never met somebody under 25 who found Snapchat in the least bit difficult to use.
Right.
Remember, they're struggling. Their stock's been going down as their... in fact, the latest quarterly results were bad because they've been losing a lot of users. So they want to... they realized that what was a benefit in the early days of being hard to understand so that, you know, teenagers would show other teenagers, oh, you do this, is no longer a benefit. I don't know. So they want to, that's what happened is Instagram got everybody over 25.
Oh, there was a story I was going to ask us about.
Yes. We're going through it quickly so we can get to dinner.
No, I give you that as the warning. Like, you've got half an hour before I get hanging.
Oh, no. We're almost done. Yeah.
But
I got to run too.
The Texas church shooting and the FBI having challenges decrypting the gunman's phone. I thought it was interesting that they asked about fingerprint reading. Yes. What I did wonder, though, what happens with Face ID?
They would just say, look at this. It's just like taking a fingerprint.
But he's dead.
Oh,
so
they wouldn't be able
to unlock
it.
Could you use a dead body to unlock it?
No. Your eyes need to be open?
Well,
okay.
If you have attention, there's a setting on the Face ID that says, do I have to pay attention or not? And you can turn that off. It's on by default. I turn it off because it means it works more often. You don't have to look at it specifically. And then it might work. But I think your eyes have to be open. I do. But I guess
I don't know. I was like... Oh, what does that mean?
Here's my only point on this. But we're going to see the whole thing now. You see why we need to be able to decrypt cell phones. But what did they do before there were cell phones? Did they ever solve crimes before there were cell phones? The fact that...
Well, this is wiretapping.
Yeah, but the fact
They had no recording of your phone calls.
But it's more than your phone calls in here. There's everything in here, right? The fact that we have now something we carry in our pocket that has our entire lives on here, of course, is a gold mine for law enforcement. But it's a brand new gold mine. This is something that had never existed before. And I would submit it should be protected just as the contents of your mind are protected.
Yes.
It's not a wiretap on a phone call. It's not a phone.
This is the problem with
principles
being written to technologies, or laws being written to technology, not to principle. This is the problem I have with worrying about legislators going after the internet.
By the way, they know who did it.
First class mail.
They know who did it. I guess they want to see if anybody else did it.
Anybody else did it, yeah.
Well, so the other thing is you do have, and you have had in the past, access to people's computers. So like once I am arrested for committing a crime, they can search my entire home. They can grab my computer. They can try to get all they want off of it. So,
but if your computer's encrypted,
they can't do anything about it.
Well, and there's a guy who's in jail with an indeterminate sentence because he won't unlock his hard drive.
Yes, that's right.
But it's a weird case because the judge said this is different because we know there's child pornography on there. So but that's the point. And the same thing with fingerprints and Face ID. Traditionally, courts have held that they can't get a password, but they can get fingerprint just as they do when you go in and you get fingerprinted or take a piece of your hair for DNA. But not all courts. Some courts say
Or you want to go after your husband.
Yeah. Or
we didn't talk about that story yet.
Yeah. Yeah. What,
there's oh, yeah. A,
so there's a, what, I don't even know, the flight that was.
It was Iranian nationals on a flight to somewhere in the Middle East.
Why? The husband falls asleep.
They were going to Bali.
Going to Bali.
That's right, Bali. The family was going on vacation. What a nice vacation.
As one does. Yes. It's on Qatar Airlines or Qatar Airlines. And the wife reaches over, takes the guy's phone, puts his finger on it because he's asleep, and discovers he's having an affair, starts screaming. Plane has to... has to turn back.
It doesn't turn back. It lands. It diverts to Chennai.
It diverts. No, Bali for them.
We got to tell the story right.
Yeah.
And they were actually allowed on a later flight to Bali. So they were allowed to continue.
Calm down and you can get on the next flight. Just calm down. We don't care if you had an affair or you put your finger on the fingerprint reader. Just calm down.
And she was drinking. So... As a woman who is very, very expressive, I would say, had I discovered that my husband was having an affair.
Of course you would.
They might have to divert the plane.
I would have just I would have just sat there and cried myself.
Oh, no. No. Although her child was with her.
Silently sobbed into my airline coffee.
You're not supposed to drink the coffee on airlines.
Not just the pots, the whole water system. All right, this is more up your alley. Harmony Link.
We talk about that on the podcast.
I figured you would. Harmony's sending out emails to owners of the Harmony Link, which, by the way, is a cloud-based service, including, you know, hardware has a cloud-based back end, that after March 2018, it's going to stop working. In other words, if you bought a Link, it will be bricked.
Yeah, this is a terrible thing. And so I'm going
to
go straight
from... But what is Logitech to do if it's an obsolete product? They have to support it forever?
Here's my thing. I've been calling for this. My celebratory, like, ta-da! I've been calling for this for a long time. Companies need to create expiration dates for consumer products. If it's a software-based product, you need to say, and this is happening in the enterprise.
Microsoft's always done this. When they put out a version of Windows,
So does Google. So does Apple. Yeah. So now when this solves a lot of the problems because consumers can say, oh, I don't want to buy this because it's only got a five-year lifespan. So that's my take. Kevin has another take, but I don't remember what it is.
My take is don't buy anything that requires a cloud service. Or if you do, make sure you can supplant it and keep it running if you want to keep using it.
Also a good option.
Here's one. We could just do the headline and move on. Greta Van Susteren is launching an app called Sorry. And I think that's fair.
For what? Huh.
Everything. It's actually, you will get to accept or reject apologies from a friend. Or from a public figure. If it's a public figure, we all get to see and vote on accept or reject. So,
oh my God, it's like hot or not for public shame.
Yeah.
Oh!
So Kathy Griffin, she gives as an example on her Facebook page, Greta does. As an example, Kathy Griffin, remember she picture of her with a chopped off head of Donald Trump. She could apologize on Sorry. Was it enough or not? People would vote. How would she know if her apology was accepted without the vote counter, asks Greta. Or how about when a cable news network apologizes for a blunder, a politician for cheating on a spouse, Dove Soap, for that commercial? It's just endless, says Greta Van Susteren. Everybody's got an app.
And I think
this is an app for the times. Sorry, the sorry app. Let's take a break. Picks of the week coming up. And I'm going to start with talking about the Lighthouse, which I know, Stacey, you told me I was a dork for not buying. So I went out and bought one, and I love it. Lighthouse is the only security camera that has a LiDAR in it. You might say, well, what the?
It's not LiDAR.
Well, it's LiDAR-like, right? What is it?
It is a time of light sensor. Or, sorry, time of flight sensor.
Time of flight sensor. It doesn't spin around like the LiDAR on top of a Google car. It's right here. But what it does do is it makes a 3D map of everything out there, and that allows it. This is a security camera. It's got infrared light, so it can see in the dark. It allows it to know what's out there, people, pets. It can distinguish between the two. It knows when you're there, when family members are there, strangers are there. And if you could set, it's got artificial intelligence built into it. So you could say, let me know if my daughter doesn't come home by 3. Let me know if you see any pictures of my pets. It continually analyzes the 3D map of the room to detect movement, to know what's in the map. I remember I had another brand of security camera, which constantly told me that the Mylar balloons in the corner were people invading my house. The Lighthouse does not get fooled by Mylar balloons. And what's really cool is it will notify you on your phone. Hey, there's somebody I don't recognize in your house. Show you a picture. And then right below it, it says call, you have a button to call 911, turn off security, or just ignore it. I love this thing. Light.house/twit is so smart. And I love the AI. See, so, okay, here, I'll give you an example. Look, right now, somebody just walked through our house, okay? And it pinged me, alert triggered in the living room. All okay, call 911. I could decide how I want to handle that. It recognizes people. So here's all the pictures of me that it's seen. And if it sees some things that look like me, it says, is this you? I can say, yeah, that's me, that's me, that's me, that's me, that's me. That's not me, that's not me. So that those are all me. So I can say those are all Leo Laporte, confirmed 6 images. So I'm training it. It really is cool. 1080p live stream. Two-way talk. Oh, I didn't mention that. You can talk to people. In fact, there's this great thing. It will ping you if somebody stands in front of the camera and waves. Somebody's waving. So when your kids get home, they can wave and you can go, yeah. Oh, hi, you're home? Yeah, I'm home from school. Okay, thanks for letting me know. It's got 3 different permission settings. So you've got owner, member, and can't remember what the third one is. I should look at it. So you can say, look, I'm the primary owner. But Lisa is a member, and don't bother. And and this is very important for Lisa. She doesn't like the idea of cameras being on when we're walking around in the house. She doesn't want to see people to see her in her jammies or whatever, or just want to put it on the internet. So whenever we're home, camera's off. We're home. It's secure. We don't have to worry about it. I can go on and on. This is so cool. You can say, what did the kids do while I was out yesterday? You can get a timeline. It'll play back video, a video timeline. Look at this. Leo Laporte left. Leo Laporte arrived. I know exactly what time I got home, what time I... This is incredible. I can say when it pings me, I could say, you know, are there children in the house? I can't say how old, are they old or what? So I'm going to leave security alerts on, but I'm going to say it's all okay. I could get a recap of all the pet activity in the house or all the people activity in the house. This is so cool. I can go on and on. This is the smartest home security camera I have ever seen. I love the AI built into it. I love the 3D sensor, the time of flight sensor built into it. And it's not available. So thank you, everybody. Good night. No, pre-orders were sold out. It went out like crazy, but they're making them as fast as they can. And they're going to ship a new batch very soon. And I want you to get in there and get it. Light.house/twit. You'll get 15% off the Lighthouse when it ships. And, by the way, a chance to win your own Lighthouse plus a year of service free. That's a $399 value. Lighthouse, is at light.house/twit. Put your email address in there, and they'll notify you the minute they're ready to go. And I think it's going to be soon. And you'll get 15% off as well. This thing is so cool. This is our studio one. I have them all over everywhere now. Because it's much smarter, and it doesn't ping me when it's not a problem. And best of all, unlike any of these other cameras, when we're home, there's cameras off. I like that. Light.house/twit. See site for contest rules. And, of course, 15% off Lighthouse when they ship. Now, what's Stacy's thing the world wants to know?
Ta-da! Okay. You know how we were talking about security earlier?
Yeah, we were.
It was a thing. I haven't unwrapped my...
See, I prefer something like Lighthouse to a monitoring service. I want to monitor it, and then I can decide what's going on, right? I like that better.
So what I have here is very DIY, very nerdy, so be advised. And I am touching the boards. Just ignore me. So this is from a company called Connect with a K.
Connected. A Raspberry Pi or something. What is it?
It is. It's a little board. Yeah. Connected is the name of it. And what it does is it connects in with your wired security system. So what this does is you connect the wires in through here and you put them in, and then it will take all the sensors that are wired into your house and your existing old school security system, and you can now integrate them with SmartThings. And it's pretty cool for a certain class of people who is not, like, this is not something your grandma
But this doesn't use, and this is that thing where if you're buying a cloud service and they discontinue it, you're out of luck. You own this.
You own this, and you have an app that it will connect to on your phone.
Are you going to do you use open source software with it, or?
There is an app. It is open source.
Oh, nice.
Now, I have not installed this because I thought I had a wired security system, and it turns out I don't. Oh. I have wireless. Oh. I was like, oh. So I have not seen this working. Well, look, here's the brains. So basically all this works together. It is a solution for a problem that some people will have, and it is probably a nice one. I just need to find a home to install it in and see. So my hope was to actually tell you, hey, this is amazing, or this sucks. But
well, you will. We'll hear about it. What is the website for Connect?
Oh, it is prelaunch.connectedwithak.io.
Oh, connected with a K.
I know, it's complicated.
Well, somebody
it's connected.
It's not complicated. It's an alarm panel coming soon to Kickstarter. So it is early days.
Yes. Yet. So yeah. What I have is a DIY kit, and this is something like you would put in the back of your if you wanted it to be on your wall, you would have to put it in the back of your existing alarm panel. They say that that's a problem because the metal enclosure is going to mess with the Wi-Fi signal. They are wrong. They sell this ugly plastic blue thing that you can stick it on, but no sane person is actually going to want, you know, boards on a wall.
Yeah.
So this is very DIY, but it does solve a real problem.
Indeed, indeed. Jeff Jarvis, do you have a number?
Well, we could have a number complaining about the worry about Facebook and how it changes the world, which is that Trump's campaign manager or one of his campaign managers said that they raised $280 million via Facebook. $280 million. As I think it was Josh Marshall said in a waggish tweet, well, we got to look into that one $260 million donation. But rather than talking about that, I preferred this number. Yesterday, across America, 7 trans people were elected to public office.
Isn't that amazing? It blew me away. Including, and I love this, in Virginia, eight-term congressman, who created the law against bathroom.
Or state legislator, yeah.
State legislator created the anti-transgender bathroom law. So, what's her name? I can't remember her name.
Danica.
But anyway, she said, well, screw that. Beat him.
And did you hear what she said afterwards? Danica Rome.
Danica Rome. That's right.
And afterwards asked about him, about her, the opponent. She said, Bob is now a constituent of mine. I don't complain about constituents.
Oh, that's so great.
Like anybody. Isn't that classy?
Good for you.
She's taking the Michelle Obama high road.
The high road, baby.
Yep. So it's pretty amazing. And this, by the way, I'm going to argue, the internet has a role in this. The fact that we have gay marriage in this country, which I consider a good, is because people suddenly realized that people could come out and you could recognize that you have someone in your family and they're not awful and evil and other. They're people.
They're
and
people.
I think the same now for trans. We have this whole thing going on about trans and bathrooms and all this hoo-ha, but the internet enables people to stand up and say, I'm one. You got a problem with that?
You can go back to gay marriage, and I think you could say that same thing happened, that kind of cultural shift. Happened, and it happened so fast.
And I think the internet was a key factor in that. And
so.
And you know what? Social networks were a key factor in that.
So. No, you're right. See? Why don't you do that from now on? You could be our chief internet cheerleader. Show us all the good things.
No, I got to complain too.
Okay.
I don't mind.
Robert G. Marshall was a 13-term incumbent delegate. In the Virginia, what do they call it? They have a funny name for it. The House of Barristers.
D-Birds.
Yeah, D-Birds. He called himself, Virginia's chief homophobe and introduced a bathroom bill which died in committee. Danica Rome beat him. That's got to hurt.
Did you see his sister? She went on to Twitter. I don't know if I can find her or not. She went on Twitter and basically, it's my brother, and I'm sorry he lost his job, but, you know, basically he just said karma, man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Marshall refused to debate Rome and refused to call her. Insisted on calling her him. What a...
Yeah.
D-bag.
What a Richard.
All right, we got to go because Stacy's dying, and I don't have anything right off the top.
What was Stacy? Stacy?
Yes, sir.
What's for dinner?
We're going out tonight.
Nice.
What's for dinner? Where are you going?
I don't know yet. Everything's. We live in a democratic household.
Oh, so you use herbal spoon and you spin the spoon?
When your daughter wins, where do you end up going?
It depends.
Kids tend to be tyrants, don't they?
No, she's not a tyrant. She just doesn't eat a lot of stuff.
Good. They just have veto
probably
power,
Trudy's. So that's Trudy's is Mexican food. That's actually where I sent the queso picture.
Sounds nice.
Sounds nice.
You're going to have some queso, baby.
But I don't know if it's queso night or not because we did have that Friday.
I'm
thinking
queso
sushi dipped
night.
In queso.
Queso.
I'm thinking that.
Okay. Eat queso every day. Everything.
I will tell you.
Queso.
Where did I go? I went to a place. They take a sopapilla without the honey and powdered sugar. They stuff it with brisket, and they pour queso on it.
Ew.
And it is delicious.
It does sound bad, but good. You know, it's so good it's bad, or so bad it's good. I'm not sure which.
Oh, here's Danica Rome is on MSNBC right now.
Nice. I'm going to run because I don't want anybody to die of starvation. I thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Google. What a fun conversation. You guys are so good. Jeff Jarvis, City University of New York, What Would Google Do, BuzzMachine.com, all over my Facebook feed, Stacey Higginbotham.
That's what's the problem with Facebook.
It is. Stacey on IoT.com, @GigaStacey, all over my Facebook feed. I wish I had more. I want more Stacey on my Facebook feed. But you can get more Stacey in your inbox if you subscribe to her great newsletter and listen to her podcast with Kevin. Thank you, Stacey. Thank you, Jeff. We do this show every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. That's now 2130 UTC because we're on standard time once again. 2130 UTC. Please stop by. Watch out youtube.com/twit or twit.tv/live. Join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. And if you can't be here live, subscribe so you'll get a copy in your podcast client, your Pocket Cast, your Overcast, or your iTunes every single week. You don't want to miss this show. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.